Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Ladies and gentlemen, today we're asking the question of Chomi, what would it take for you as an adult to cut off your adult children? So hypothetically, because you're looking at your youngins and you're like, yeah, but my child is 6 or no, my child is 10. I could never. But hypothetically, 20 years down the line and your child is acting out and it is breaking you apart. It is breaking you apart and it is just out of control. So how are you, will you ever think of cutting your children off, or how does it go? So ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome. We are dealing with toxic family dynamics, né? And it is what it is. We as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of anything that we are about to play today because it's strictly for illustration purposes. We're diving into this conversation because many of us talk about toxic relationships and toxic what and toxic what. We're in the era of toxic everything toxic, right? But what happens when the child is the toxic one? What happens when the person that is abusive is the offspring and not the parent?
I'd feel terrible. I appreciate that you're all looking at me right now and you're thinking, he's gonna play the piano. Awesome, we're gonna have some music. You're right to think so. I am a classically trained pianist. But I feel a lot of pressure because I don't think I'll be able to play for you. I'd feel terrible for letting you down. That's not my intention. I'm wondering if you'd all be cool if I don't play. We could talk instead. How would you feel about that? You know, it was actually my mother who wanted me to play the piano, start a music school at home. She envisioned taking care of my children while I taught. The only problem is I'm gay, I don't want kids, and I hate playing the piano. You see, every family has unspoken contracts, and unlike written contracts, they come in the form of expectations and obligations. What to do, how to do it, and when to do it. What do you get if you fulfill your end of the deal? Love and acceptance. Well, in theory, anyway. In reality, most family contracts are often one-sided, lopsided, or outright exploitative. And when they are, well, it can be both hopeless and desperate.
My father never wanted me as a son, and he definitely didn't want me as a daughter. We haven't spoken since I was 12. When I came out as trans, I asked my mother if she could respect my new name and life as Vicky. She refused. I wanted my family in my life, but we could not have been more separated.
Our stories are far from rare. Over 1 in 4 American adults are estranged from their families, and that could be from a parent or both, a sibling or a relative. And when I say estranged, I don't mean infrequent emails or dinner at Thanksgiving. I mean completely cut off. And the main causes are emotional abuse, personality and value clashes, mismatched expectations, physical or sexual trauma. And now when you tell people this, they're like, oh, well, but honey, they're the only family you got. I mean, but this is really the best that we can do? Are we destined to choose between self-suppression or tearing ourselves away as a last resort? Or is there a third path, a healthier way of dealing with our toxic family relationships? Now, I believe that the answer lies in looking at our family contracts, dissecting them, and then renegotiating them for the sake of ourselves and everyone involved. Now, since we're talking about contracts, you know, a few years ago, I was at a trampoline park. and I was asked to sign a contract that said I could not sue them if I injured myself at the facility. You know what I'm talking about, right? And I signed this contract a full 10 minutes before I needed to sue them. You know, we are constantly clicking agree to lengthy agreements that we don't even know what we're agreeing to. It's like we've completely lost track of how contracts even work. Now, I am not a lawyer, so I asked my friend, who is a lawyer, what actually makes a contract work?
A contract only needs five elements to be legally binding. One, the offer, which is the agreement to do or not to do something. Two, acceptance of the terms and conditions. Three, consideration, which is a promise to reciprocate value, whether monetary or otherwise. Four, mutuality, which is the understanding that all parties will perform all the duties that they agreed upon. And five, capacity. Everyone involved needs to be of legal age and of sound mind to enter into a contract.
If you think about it, family obligations and legal contracts are not very different. Well, except that the offer is often done as this one-sided ultimatum, and so the acceptance of the terms and conditions of the offer are received reluctantly, under pressure. And then the consideration, which is the reciprocal exchange of value, is not always fair because it's often the other family member, aka the elder family member, who dictates what is fair. And mutuality can only be if both parties are freely willing. And capacity-wise, you were a minor, not a legal adult when the rules start applying to you. In fact, most of the times, your family contract gets revealed to you in stages throughout your life with statements like, if you want to play with your toys, then you're going to have to play the piano more. If you want money for your piano lessons, you're going to have to help out around the house. While you're living under this roof, you need to be getting straight A's. And depending on what specific culture you were born into, you might have extra clauses. So, for example, if, like me, you were born into a traditional Chinese household, you get obey your father, respect your mother, care for your parents in old age, honor your ancestors, provide male heirs. Do I need to go on? And whatever your specifics are, you come into this world in debt, and you pay it off throughout your life, kind of like student loans. If we can renegotiate legal contracts, then why can't we renegotiate family ones? My parents were freedom swimmers, and they weren't doing the 200-meter freestyle at the YMCA. They were literally swimming across the Southern Sea from China to Hong Kong because they didn't have enough money for seats on an illegal boat or yet another failed attempt to escape communist rule. Coming from political land-owning families,
cyber threats are no longer just an IT problem. They are a risk to our national security and the core of our economy. Join various leaders and industry stakeholders at the 3rd Namibia International Cybersecurity Conference and Exhibition, NICSC 2026, taking place from the 22nd to the 24th of April at Arabush Travelodge in Windhoek. Corporate early bird registrations close on the 31st of March. So register now at dstech.com.na. NICSC 2026. Securing Africa's digital future.
My grandparents were killed as enemies of the state. And from there, my parents sought refugee status in America, and they struggled to survive in a new country with a new language and a new way of living. Now, I was born in New York City, and I grew up speaking Cantonese. I learned English in preschool. Compared to my parents, my life was pretty easy to begin with. And so it was no wonder that they expected a lot of me. And it was also no wonder that I felt awful for not being what they wanted. You see, being gay went against my family contract. It meant that I would not be producing any grandsons. It meant that I would be dishonoring all of the ancestors who had given their lives so that I could live. And I felt guilty. In my younger years, I was adamant about not coming out to my parents because I didn't want to disappoint them. I was determined to carry my secret to the grave. I even tried running away, living in foreign countries, but that didn't improve the situation. I was still locked into my family contract. Now, I knew I couldn't go back, but I no longer wanted to hide, and so that's when I saw the third path, confrontation, laying the contract out on the table, pointing out what does not work for you, and renegotiating a new contract. Now, the stakes were high, but I knew this had to be done, and I decided to synthesize a five-step method of renegotiation. And so the first step is to hear the other person and to acknowledge what they're saying. Now, acknowledgement doesn't mean agreement. It simply means listening and letting them know that you did. So, for example, when my dad said to me, "Son, you're gay and teaching spirituality, you're a hypocrite," I just repeated back what he said. I said, "Dad, I hear you. Because I am gay and teaching spirituality, you think that I am a hypocrite." This way, he can hear that I understood what he was saying, and more importantly, he gets to hear repeated back to him the words coming out of his own mouth. Now, if you can do this in a neutral way, you will create empathy, which then lays the groundwork for the second step, to say how you're really feeling. "Dad, I can only love who I love, and it makes me sad to hear that you feel that way." Communicate your true emotions clearly. This way, the other person can understand the effect their words have on you. Now that you've laid everything out on the table, the third step is to connect your stories. Demonstrate, without blame, that you understand where they're coming from and also share where you're coming from. Like, "Dad, I understand that it is very important for you that I value the traditions of this family and I respect our ancestors. And I do. I am grateful for our ancestors. And I am grateful for you for risking your life and fleeing to America. But I can't change the fact that I'm gay. And I'm sorry that this hurts you, but I can't pretend to be something I'm not." After you have related in a way that they can understand, this sets you up for the fourth step, to request for what you want in your relationship. "Dad, I would like you to support me even if you don't agree, and I would like to be a part of your life if that's something you want." After telling them what you want, the final step is to invite them to click agree. Now, it's very important to offer them the choice so that they can decide about whether or not they are capable of meeting your request. "So, Dad, what do you think about that?" For those of you experiencing unhealthy family dynamics, you can use these five simple steps. Now, I use the example of me being gay, but you could use this anytime and anywhere. This structure of renegotiation can be duplicated for all unhealthy contracts. Now, does it guarantee a happy ending? It depends. In my case, when I asked my dad if he could support me as I am, he ended up saying no. So, what do you do with that? Well, having received a definite answer, you can now begin the active process of separating from this unhealthy dynamic. You can also begin the process of grieving the loss of a family member who you thought was supposed to be unconditionally there for you. And no matter how hard it is to face such a rejection, you can rest assured in the knowledge that you tried. And you no longer now have to hold on to the what ifs. You see, breaking up with your family, it doesn't mean you have to delete the good times from your memory. It takes courage to let go of someone who cannot support you as you are. But if you can find that courage, the reward is that you get to live unapologetically as you.
Breaking up with my parents was instinctual and profoundly necessary. If it wasn't for that breakup, I never would have been able to take the steps required to be me. I think my younger self just wanted my parents to choose me, and they did not. So I learned to choose myself.
Yeah, I learned to choose myself too. My mom and I, we renegotiated. We started communicating differently. My dad, well, he's kind of like the piano. I don't have high hopes of playing again. Renegotiating or breaking up with your family does not guarantee happy endings, but what it does guarantee is you gain more courage and a new level of self-respect. I mean, we spend all of our lives negotiating how we relate to other people all the time, but at the end of the day, you can never really negotiate who you are. So, my question to you is this. Are you living your life? Or is your life colored by the unspoken, unwritten family contracts that you're afraid of addressing? So whether you are monocultural, multicultural, male, female, straight, queer, or exist outside of any restrictive labels or constructs, whatever, my challenge to you is this. Take a good, honest look at the fine print and ask yourself, is this beneficial for your development as a human being? Are you ready to dismantle the unspoken family contracts that are no longer sustainable? And if you are, and your family is willing, then you get to live a more fulfilling and healthier relationship. And if not, and they say no, you tried. You did your best. No regrets. Now you get to live life on your terms. So, how do you feel about that? Thank you.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Today we are talking about, you know, cutting off adult children. Now, the reason that I played this particular clip was because the dynamics are the same everywhere, globally. When a person comes out to their family as queer, gay, lesbian, transgender, cross-dresser, whatever, There is usually a sense of rejection. There is usually a sense of cutting off. There is usually a sense of dead to me. Not unless your parents are Superman and Superwoman and they are hella supportive of who you are and they have always known that you are a bit different, then that is a whole different ballgame. And I am so happy that you are born in a family like that that accepts you from day one. But in most cases, right? In most cases, ordinary or not ordinary, let's say cultural. Cultural Namibians do not necessarily accept this phenomenon. They do not accept your preference or your mechanism or your like or who you love. They do not accept that because the whole idea is to procreate, get children, raise them, be married, the whole nine yards, right? And the reason that I wanted us to listen to this is because it sounds beautiful. It sounds beautiful. It sounds amazing. It is romanticized that, oh yeah, we're going to come out and we're going to be great. And you know what? If people don't accept us, that is on them and we're going to live happily ever after. And that's okay. But what I have a problem with in this scenario is that, is it not okay for me to not accept you? Why do we seek so much acceptance from other people? And when they do not accept us, we make it seem like our rights are above other people's rights. When somebody comes out as gay, you as the family, mind you that gay people, lesbian people, transgender, LGBTQ, A, Z, they usually live with themselves for a lifetime. They have enough years to figure themselves out. They have time to figure themselves out. They have time to explore, and they have time to accept and to acknowledge who they are. They go through the process of grief. They go through the process of acceptance and healing and being reborn. And that is not something that is done in 2 weeks. It's not something that is done in 24 hours. It's not something that is done in a day. It is something that is done over a span of time. And when they are ready, they are ready, right? And this is now after, I've always known, like this particular gentleman has always known since he was 12 years old. And right now he's in his 35s, right? Or in his mid 30s. Those are almost 2 decades. Those are almost 2 decades of him learning to accept himself, learning to be with himself, learning what he likes, what he doesn't like, learning who he is, getting to know himself, right? And giving himself grace and patience, and also being intentional with what he's doing. Also being a person that is comfortable in his own skin. And it took him almost 2 decades. And now, you sit in front of your dad and you give him this ultimatum. And your dad, you don't even give your dad time to think. You don't give your dad a year to think. You had 20 years to think about you and your life and who you are, right? But your dad must now decide that he is transitioning from having a straight son that is going to bring home a daughter-in-law that is going to give birth to children, and these children are going to be great, and we are going to be grandparents. Your dad has to transition from that, from the age. Like, imagine you are 30-something, right? You are mid-30s. Ever since the day you were born, this was the dream. And now you are asking your father in 15 minutes, right, if he is willing to be part of your queer life. Because many queer people have been cut off from their community, from their parents, from their family members, because of their sexuality. And I'm not saying it is right, but I'm saying that could it be that grace is not given to the heterosexual? Could it be that grace is not given to those that are straight simply because they are straight? Like, straight people don't have emotions. Straight parents don't know what they're going through. Straight parents have not gone through struggles and troubles. And if we are wrapping this up to our conversation of tonight, we would say that maybe, just maybe, part of the reason that parents cut off their adult children when they come out to them is because they are not awarded the same respect, dignity, and also time to actually get to know this new person. I'm still your son. I'm still your daughter. No, you're not. Because I built a vision of you in my heart and in my head. So you're not.
E filoshisho otalikula ndulako na vewa yuk. E kwashili palekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHP. O atupa teleko meshwe kwashili palekolo asfika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa voveli ponjeo shilongo, shijo shitopo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis mwule o minute disyona elela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo ponjeo shilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP will rebound you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Today is the 9th of the 3rd month, 2026. It is a Monday evening and it's 31 minutes past the hour of 9. And ladies and gentlemen, the number in studio is 083-288-401. The conversation for this evening is cutting off adult children. Now, the first example that I had given, or the first illustration that I had given for this evening, was that of Mr. Jones Chong. Mr. Jones Chong had come out to his his family that he is gay, and that is not a problem, right? My issue is the deadline in which people have to now agree or disagree. Right? Because I don't hear him saying anything about giving his mother an ultimatum in terms of like, do you want to be part of my life or not? But I hear him giving his father an ultimatum. I hear him giving his father an ultimatum of saying like, do you want to be part of my life or not? And that is as if you are pushing your dead konguzi kucha. If you don't accept me, then you're out of my life. But I don't hear the same remarks. I don't hear the same sentiment when it comes to his mother. Did he have a conversation with his mother? Because apparently, right, him and his mother are getting along now. Mara, there was nothing in his story that spoke about his parents, both his parents. It was just about the father. So the father is the bad guy here because he is not willing to accept, because there is no happy ending here, because his father is a deeply traditional Chinese man that is not about having a gay son. And just because you made a choice or just because you are different does not mean everybody needs to accept you. And I think that that's the hardest part, right? Because it's everybody's free will. I choose who I'm going to accept and who I'm not going to accept. And that's why we're talking about parents cutting off adult children. Many of us are suffering in silence, but it is due to the fact that we are harboring fugitives, or we are harboring criminals, or we are harboring death next door to our rooms. And those are the children that are going to come and khakhagura us with omakatana. Now you are terrified, right? Because these children are out of control. It's either they drink too much, they do drugs, or they are just gangsters and thugs, or they just don't listen. Cutting off an adult child, also known as estrangement or going no contact, is a serious, often last resort decision made when parents' emotional or physical well-being is at risk due to a consistently toxic or harmful relationship with their adult child. It is typically a process, not a single event, and requires careful consideration and the setting of firm boundaries. So that is what it is, cutting off adult children. Now, there's particular reasons as to why people cut off adult children. For example, your mom is a pensioner and she lives in the north, and or she lives in the south, or she lives wherever, but she's not in the city. And she is getting now openzera, but your youngest sibling is there with your mother, and your mom is basically remaining with nothing because your youngest sibling is stealing all her money, and the money is the one that is supposed to be feeding her, buying her medication, doing whatever. And you, as the sibling that is in the city that is now supporting your parent, is fed up, right? You're fed up of this person being harbored in your house. You're fed up. You're thought he's so. And your mom decides that she's also fed up because it's been 2 years. This child doesn't want to go and get a job. He doesn't want to go and do what. He's just getting people pregnant in the village. He's just out of control, and also he harasses her. He harasses her to the point where she actually fears for her life, and she's emotionally drained. Every time your mother comes and visits you in the city, your mom sleeps for at least 2 straight days, but not straight sleeping. It's just one of those sleeps, and then wakes up, goes and eats, and goes back to bed too, so she can rest her body, because she is emotionally and physically and spiritually exhausted. And all this exhaustion is coming from your younger sibling that is living with your parent and basically abusing her. Hmm? Mental health professionals suggest that an adult child's behavior may warrant setting strong boundaries or even cutting ties in specific situations. Now, what would warrant this? One, emotional abuse, a pattern of manipulation, belittling, guilt tripping, or using past vulnerabilities against the parent. So hypothetically, your mom was most now not the best of young moms. Let's say that, right? But now she's a pensioner, right? Your mom was not the best of young moms because she was also navigating through life, and she was also navigating through her own challenges, and she might have gone through a little depression here and there. She didn't know how to sort herself out. So your mom used to drink a lot. Your mom used to drink a lot. Your mom used to party a lot. And then you guys would basically be left at home with your youngest brother. Now, what would be, using past vulnerabilities against your parent would be your little brother saying that, yeah, so you didn't raise me. You didn't raise me because I was raised by Nancy, because you were always off in bars. Now, your mom might have a sense of guilt for that, because as she aged, she realized and noticed that she didn't actually raise him, and he was raised by his older siblings, which are you guys, and you guys were all just children. And to some degree, your mom feels guilty because she feels like she is the reason that he turned out to be that way, because the rest of you guys are a hit. You guys are successful. You guys are great. But he is the only flop again amongst the flock. So he uses this to guilt trip and manipulate your mom and also belittle her. And this is a pattern. It always happens. Like, yeah, I would have been like Nancy them and Johanna them. I would have been the same as Coca-Cola them and Matriarch them had you just paid attention to me, but you were too busy drinking. Yeah, you were too busy getting drunk in bars. You were too busy running around with men. You were too busy. And these are things, right, that hurt your parent. And that is emotional abuse, right? And it becomes a pattern if every time he knows that he's wrong or he wants money, then he throws those little things out. And now your mom doesn't know how to cope with it, doesn't know how to deal with it. She doesn't even know that it's manipulation. And then belittlement. It's belittlement is now your mom dressing up for church, right? And she's going to church, and your younger brother is the first one to throw negative slurs. Bro. Yeah, if only you were this well-behaved when you were younger, maybe I wouldn't have turned out to be the way I am. Maybe if you were a church-going woman that time that you gave birth to us, maybe I would have been a better person. You hindered my future. And to some degree, our parents do honestly believe that we are people that don't know how to make decisions, nah? They believe that we are fragile little babies that have no idea what we're doing. And for a long time, we as young adults, we as their children adults, right? We get away with it. We get away with it because our parents, no matter how old we are, they still consider us to be their children, their babies, their unkanamani. You understand? So there is no way in heaven or hell that your mom would look at you when you are 50 and think that, onkuruntungu, this grown up, no, is my child. Because you remain their child. So even this belittlement that is happening there, your mom would never ever in her life think that, no, When you dropped out of or out of school and started doing your own things, you were 18 years old. You were an adult. When you started smoking drugs and doing alcohol and all of that, you were an adult. You were not in my house. You had gone and you went and flopped out there. And that's not on me. Because I had everybody out of my house. Everybody was in a position of taking care of themselves. You went and messed up what you had. And now you are doomed. But your mother will never think like that. You think like that. And you say that to your parent. But vele mamzela. Mamzela will never think like that because it is her child. So that belittlement is there, even though she actually doesn't deserve it. Because she did her part. In all honesty, he turned out great if it wasn't for himself. And guilt tripping and using past vulnerabilities. And especially in scenarios where there was abuse or neglect to some degree, then adult children have a tendency of throwing that in people's faces the whole time. Yeah, I was traumatized because you guys were always fighting. Yeah, I'm living under trauma because I grew up in a very violent house. Yeah, but this person has never been touched a day in their lives. This person has been treated like an egg all their days. It was just their parents that were fighting and beating each other. Mara. Now it's a thing, right? Because you guys were fighting each other, I messed up. But when did you become messed up? Because you're 40 now. And you've been messed up for the past 10 years. So, when did you become messed up? When you're 30? Because 30, you are an adult. You are an adult pro mix plus. So, how does that contribute to you doing this? Because it seems like blame shifting. It seems like guilt tripping. If you are listening and then you are the bad child tonight, man, today's your chance to change. Today's your chance to change and to just buckle up. Buckle up and be a good person, man. Come on. Alrighty, we've got a caller. Alright. The number in studio is 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. Alright. The next one is unfair accusations or gaslighting. Constant blame shifting. You see, I told you. Constant blame shifting. A denial of events as experienced by the parent or a refusal to take responsibility for their own actions. That is when an adult decides that you are no longer my child. You are dead to me. Get out of my house. I never want to see you again. I'm cutting you off. I'm done. Even I'm taking you out of my will. Like you are dead to me. That is when a parent decides that they're going to cut off this child. Because of all these numbers that we're going to be listing today and we're going to be talking about. So we are on number 2. Unfair accusations, gaslighting. Constant blame shifting. It's your fault that I went to rob the liquor store because I didn't have money because you didn't give me money and that's why I went to commit a crime. Bro, how old are you again? Okay. All right. Denial of events as experienced by the parents. So you are pulling up, right? You're pulling up with a gat. You're pulling up with a gat and you're finna kill your parents, right? And then, at some point you hear the panic and you hear them like going on and all of that. And then you are most probably drunk. So you didn't even know that this happened. And then at some point you put the gun away and you go and sleep. And then tomorrow morning you are standing in front of them and they're like, you pulled out a gun on us. And you are like, no, I didn't. I would never do that. You're lying.
Hogora o kuhinga wa ariko hiyodungo, peha joku hinga uriko hiyodungo. Hogora o kuhinga ondapo jiyuthwa, peha joku hinga ondapo ya pitirira. Hogora o kutaguru kira po mataguru kiro, peha joku pita o warasha ampoka. Hogora ishewe o kurundura o mataera we, peha juu kukutu. Hogora o kuninga shukasho mojira mo patelitu, eto kupita o mwenyo.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Alrighty, welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. So we are talking about reasons as to why some adults some parents decide to cut off their adult children. Now, cutting off an adult child is becoming an estranged person or going no contact. That means you don't talk to them, you don't greet them, you don't do nothing. Like they are dead to you basically, like somewhere, somehow. And this is not a decision that is made just because one day you decided to put in too much water in the bathtub. It is after a series of events that show that you are damaging the relationship. You are damaging your parents. You are damaging everything around you. And it is safer to be without you than to be with you. So, the first storyline was parents not accepting gay children. Now we're going to go to how did your parents mess you up? Ladies and gentlemen, we as Eagle Media House do not claim any ownership of everything or anything that we're going to be playing here tonight except my voice. I am the property of Eagle FM, but everything else is strictly for conversation purposes. Enjoy.
Was there anything that your parents said or did during your childhood that you wish they hadn't? Was there anything that hurt you, that left a scar you can still feel today? Perhaps you've come to forgive your parents for those moments of weakness, because you know they love you and did their best. Or perhaps you're not sure about their love for you, and you have to live with that uncertainty. Every child is at risk of suffering in this world full of imperfect adults. And childhood scars cut deep, shaping our entire lives. I was speaking with Nana, my 89-year-old grandmother, about this talk. And she started crying, telling me that her parents never told her that they loved her. I didn't point out that the closest she's gotten to saying those words to me has been a lots of love scribbled in birthday cards. Because I know that she loves me. She's just never felt comfortable expressing those words that mean so much to her. Even the best of parents have deficits in their parenting skills. And those deficits cause children to feel unloved. And a lack of parenting education leads to unsafe parenting, which can cause trauma and even death in childhood. In the US, 5 children will die today because they have not received good enough care from their parents. That's 5 children too many, every single day of the year, in just that one country. In the UK, it's 1 or 2 children every week. Child abuse and neglect is not an evil that can't be prevented. It's a form of unsafe and uneducated parenting. In China, the leading cause of death among young people is suicide. Children don't just kill themselves because of biochemical imbalance. More often, it's because they feel unloved, unwanted, or unworthy of a place in this world. For too long, parenting skills have been taken for granted. And parenting education has not been properly established. It's time to invest in widespread parenting education to prevent trauma and save children's lives. Over the past 10 years, I've worked with hundreds of children who have been abused, neglected, and traumatized. I started by volunteering as a counsellor for a national children's telephone helpline in the UK. And hearing the cries and screams of children suffering down the phone was more than enough to propel me into making this my career. So I waved goodbye to dreams of working in a glassy office building as an undefined business executive and went back to university to undertake a master's in social work. This qualification led to me working for local government, which meant it was often my duty to take children away from their parents for their safety and put them into the care of approved strangers or children's homes. But for the past 3 years, I've been continuing my social work practice in Shanghai as the director of a child and family therapy service. Here, I don't have the power to take children away from their parents like I did in the UK. But I do have the opportunity to lead a team of child specialists who work with families to improve parenting skills. Working in China has given me much greater insight into the flaws that exist in the UK's system of child protection. And one of the most major issues is that parenting education services are in very short supply. They're reserved for those who most need them. But it's not easy to figure out who is most in need of this support. I believe that it needs to be offered to everyone if we care about keeping every child safe in the UK, in China, and all around the world. Here's why. So let's start by taking a look at just some of the ways in which parents mess up their children. You know, in reality, parenting deficits are as complex and varied as humans are. Your parents had their own unique set of deficits, and now you do too. And that makes spotting the harmful deficits pretty tricky, especially in today's world, in which we've become exceptionally skilled at projecting a perfectly filtered image of our lives on WeChat, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so many social media platforms. Because what these projections don't show is the truth, like the fact that we struggle to pay attention to anything other than smart devices. This is Kyra at 7 years old. And the truth behind this photo is that Kyra didn't make it to her 8th birthday because she died of malnutrition. Some of you might presume that Kyra is from a developing country where children starving to death is a common occurrence. In fact, Kyra was born and raised in the UK, one of the wealthiest countries in the world. You might now be thinking that Kyra must have been from a family with little to no money, unable to put food on the table. This was not the case. Kyra lived in a household with enough money. And when she died, there was a bowl of fruit on the table and cupboards full of food in the kitchen. In fact, the only thing standing in the way of her survival was her parent, her mum, who was overweight and unhappy about it. Kyra's mum was on a diet, and she enforced those food restrictions on her daughter, purposefully using this as a cruel form of discipline with fatal consequences. But it doesn't have to be this way. You know, I've worked with many families in very similar situations, and through intensive parenting training, my colleagues and I have successfully helped them to change their eating and discipline habits. As parents, any of our inner struggles with food, anger, stress, perfectionism can hurt our children. And further education about our child's needs can help us prioritize them. But I am worried that we're becoming so addicted to smart devices that we're becoming more and more blind to our own inner struggles and the inner struggles of our loved ones too. As parents, for example, it's very easy to become blind to the impact of the pressure the fear of failure that our children feel. A few months ago, I was reading a news article about an 18-year-old boy called Xiaofan from Zhongsu province. He'd recently taken the Gaokao exam. Both of his parents had good jobs which required them to stay in Beijing. So they frantically called him on results day, desperate to know his score. So he told them. He scored 470, a brilliant score that would secure him a place at a top university. His parents were so happy, and at the end of the summer, they came home to see him and celebrate. But those celebrations never happened, because Xiaofan killed himself. The truth was, he only scored 170. He had lived with the shame and guilt of his failure all summer, and he couldn't face the consequences of his parents finding out the truth. His parents put pressure on him because they wanted him to have the best life, and the result was no life at all. They loved him, but did they ever tune in to the depth of his fears and the weight of the pressure he was putting on himself? Did they even realize, before it was too late, that their consistent expressions of love, warmth, and support mattered more than anything? In the UK, because many parents are blind to their own deficits, we've created professional roles like mine, focused on spotting those deficits for them. Ideally, before it's too late. This is baby Peter from London. He was just 17 months old when he was killed by his mum's boyfriend. After suffering 8 months of beatings while his mum stood by. This all happened despite Peter being on an official local government child protection plan. And being seen by professionals 60 times within that time period. The trained professionals only saw his mum being good to him, and they believed her lies. The truth is that our parenting is always a reflection of our best self and our worst self. In some ways, Peter's mum was a good parent, but she hid her harmful deficits from the world. You know, I've worked with so many parents like her, and every time, no matter how criminal or horrendous their actions have been, I've seen their love and heartbreak. Just such little expression of it. So in summary, we know three things, and they are, number one, it's very hard to distinguish between abusive and non-abusive parents. As a social worker myself, I can testify that it's impossible to know which parents are being honest and which aren't. And I've found that I cannot reliably predict which parents will go on to harm their children tomorrow and which won't. Many parents are blind to their own deficits, and no professional can ever really know what's going on behind closed doors, because we only see what you see. A filtered image. Number two, systematically removing children from every parent there is ever a suspicion or concern about would constitute a violation of human rights and is not a solution. We already have over 70,000 children currently living in government care in the UK, and most of them are not having a good time. And number three, parents are people with the potential to learn new skills. No one imagines being a parent who will hurt or hate their child, but it happens. And if being a parent is one of the toughest and riskiest roles that we can take on in society, then why don't we receive any education or training about how to do the job well? The current lack of parenting education leads to unsafe parenting. So who thinks it's time for parents to go back to school? Thank you. Research shows that for children of any age, parenting that is warm, sensitive, and supportive provides the greatest chance of a child developing strong academic abilities, good social skills, and emotional resilience. It's the quality of the relationship between the parent and child that matters. So parents need to be educated about how to discipline and communicate with their child without fracturing that relationship. This means that as a parent, you can give yourself permission to express so much more love and praise than disappointment. And there are strategies you can learn that will help you to discipline out of love and logic rather than anger and frustration. For government agencies, this is a call to research and implement systems for parenting education. The World Health Organization says that parent guidance programs are proven to reduce violence and significantly improve parenting skills, leading to less behavioral problems in the child and better mental health for their parents. Who likes the sound of that? Through investing in the development of everyone's parenting skills, more children will survive and thrive, and less children will go on to become unstable adults, addicted to violence, drugs, and alcohol. China already has a progressive new family violence law in place, and its success depends on a system of parenting education. And when you think about it, isn't it reasonable to ask for at least the same level of systematic teaching and measuring of competence for parents as there is for drivers on the road? For businesses, service providers, and NGOs in this sector, I recommend for you to provide parent training programs. There is a need and a demand, just like there is for birthing classes and yoga with goats. Parenting skills need to be modeled, learnt, and developed over time with support, feedback, and guidance. And I see and hear firsthand every day parents in China seeking information and training about how to be a better parent and struggling to find a class. Whether you're a parent or not, you're someone's child. So I challenge you today to take a step outside of your comfort zone and express more love or praise than you've ever done before to your child, your parent or grandparent, your partner, or yourself. Whoever you target will have an inner child who needs this, just like my Nana. And it's never too late to start leading a more fulfilling family life. A safe and secure childhood starts with educated parenting. This is a call to action, to take collective responsibility for providing the education and resources needed for every parent and child to have the best possible chance at family life. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, what is the hardest thing you have ever done in your life? Recently, I've learned how many people would answer that the hardest thing they've ever done was to forgive. And I've learned it in the most unconventional way. Some of you here may know I have a Facebook page called Project Nightfall where I release videos. And quite often when I release these videos, I manage to reach millions of people all around the world. When you have a reach like this, sometimes you will release a video that will bring comments like this. Aegon, just wanted to thank you for setting me free. Because of your video, I also managed to forgive my father. It's crazy to believe that videos can move people to changing their lives. But in the case of my video called The Power of Forgiveness, I have gotten thousands and thousands of this type of comments and messages. At the time when I was recording that video, it was just me in my room with my camera, my personal story, and with this haircut. But after releasing that video, I quickly realized how many people struggle with forgiveness. And that's why today I want to tell you a story of how I managed to forgive my father. When it comes to him, I had a lot of things I had to forgive him. First of all, when I was 3 years old, he left me and my mom. He also stole all the money they had gathered together, all the savings gone. And I remember how much it impacted my mom for years to come, because she would take things out on me. Instead of being a regular happy kid, I would be that kid who was always in fear of getting a beating. So that was strike number one for my dad. He totally messed up my childhood. Strike number two was when I was 11 and my mom unexpectedly died. This is the last picture I have of her. He came to the funeral only to see me cry my eyes out. But I wasn't crying because my mom was dead. I was crying because I was in fear of what am I going to do as a kid with no parents. Back then, looking at my father, deep inside I knew he didn't want me. After the funeral, just as expected, he came to me, said a few empty words, hugged me, and left. Just like that, I was one step away from becoming an orphan. He left me again. Luckily for me, I had my amazing grandparents who changed my life forever. They decided to adopt me. I have no idea where would I be if it wasn't for them. Definitely not standing here in front of you today. But ever since then, when I was 11, instead of feeling that fear back when my mom was alive, I started to feel real deep hatred towards my dad. And that totally messed up my teenage years. I think that's part of the reason why my story, my video resonated with so many people. Unfortunately, a lot of us have messed up childhoods. You know, when I was growing up with my grandparents, I was free to do whatever I wanted. Pretty much the only thing that was ever expected of me was to eat food. If you have a grandma, I know you know this image really well. As long as you eat, there's no problem. It's great. Okay, it's great. But to me at that point, at that moment, it was dangerous, that lack of pressure, that freedom. I became a bully, racist, homophobe. By the time I was 18, I was by far at the lowest point of my life. I hurt many people, and I'll probably be paying back for what I did for the rest of my life. And I promised myself back then, when I was 18, that I will never forgive my father because I blamed him for every single mistake I did. Now is a good moment to ask a question. Why is it worth to forgive in the first place? After releasing that video of mine, I also got many messages like this one. Like Alyssa said, some people don't deserve to be forgiven. Why would I forgive my father for messing up my life? He did not deserve it. Chances are that some of you here have people in your lives who wait to be forgiven, but you don't think they deserve it. Just like in the Hollywood movies, you would much rather seek justice than forgiveness. But the reason why I stand here today is because I want to tell you that if you think like you cannot go past what happened to the point of forgiveness, it's not true. Everything changes. The moment when you start seeing forgiveness as something not just for the other person, but also for you. It took me 18 years to realize it. I had to become the worst version of myself, but I finally understood it. To me, forgiveness was something that I deserved after all these bad things he had done to me. And the moment I realized it, everything became much easier. So this one night, I remember it like today. It was by far the most important night of my life. I sat down in my chair. I looked through my window. For the first time, I was truly honest with myself. I said to myself that I suck. I was really unhappy with who I was, and I knew that I needed some big changes in my life if I actually want to save myself. So on that night, I made 3 decisions that changed my life forever. The first thing I did, it might be quite extreme, but I started by changing my name. I used to be named Damien, as you can see here, and I changed my name to Agon because I really felt that I needed a new identity. Another thing I did was I left home because I was being spoiled by my grandparents. I was living in a small town in Poland, and I knew that I will not grow from that point, so I left. And last step, by far the most important one, was realizing that I had to leave my past behind if I wanted to move forward. And in leaving the past behind, I had to forgive my father. That truly was the hardest thing I've ever done. But I knew it had to be done. How did I do it? I started by asking questions. I would ask my grandma about his upbringing, and she would tell me that he was adopted when he was 4 years old, an adopted child. I asked my friend whose father used to go to school with my dad, and he would tell me that my father was a very troubled teenager, just like me. And after asking these questions more and more, after discovering more about him, at some point I started seeing him as a vulnerable human and not an enemy. Quite often, if you want to forgive somebody, the best way of doing that is to understand them. I managed to understand him, and after a few years of changing many things in my life, I managed to forgive him. And every time when I say it, I feel this freedom. It's an amazing feeling to truly forgive someone. And I know that some of you might struggle with it too, so I will tell you exactly how it feels. Because this whole story, my video, was born from a phone call. A while ago, my grandparents called me and said that he came back. After 19 years, he first time came back to pick up this paper. It's a paper that is also a final step of forgiveness. My dad never paid a dollar on me, and he owes me a lot of money. Recently, the government called him to pay all of this back. But I signed this paper and said that I don't want any of his money because I know he would have to work for years to pay it back. And my first question to my grandparents was, did he say anything? Did he say thank you? Anything he wanted them to tell me? And you know what? He said nothing. At that point, on that phone call, I truly understood the power of forgiveness. Because this time actually made me happy. I know you might think it's weird. Why would something like this make me happy? My father comes back after 19 years. He messes up again. He doesn't even say thank you after I give him such a big favor, and this makes me happy. It really did. Because it made me realize how much I do ever since I felt all these negative emotions, this emptiness, this hatred in me. It's such an amazing feeling to know that he can come back over and over, leave, mess up again and again, and it doesn't control me anymore. Forgiveness truly, truly set me free. And that's why I think my story resonates with people, is because it encourages them to put themselves first in the forgiveness, to do it for themselves. Just like this lady, I show you her picture because recently I met her in New York. She came, she hugged me and said, "Thank you for changing my family." I was like, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Because of your video, I also managed to forgive my father and it put my family back together." Every time I hear these stories, I really struggle to believe that these videos work, but they really do. And it makes me really happy. So I really hope that if you have someone like this in your life, you manage to forgive them. Or if you struggle to forgive yourself, you also manage to forgive yourself. I know a lot of people struggle with that. They think they can't. It's a common viewpoint. I cannot forgive, but it truly, truly is possible. I hope you do it today, tomorrow, or the next year. I won't sugarcoat you. It's going to be one of the hardest things you have ever done. But the moment when you arrive at that point of forgiveness, you will feel it. You will feel free. It will truly make you feel amazing. The last thing I want to show you is this picture. Some of you might have guessed it by now. It's a selfie I took with my father exactly 1 month ago. I was visiting my hometown. And I promise, what are the odds? I was just on a walk and I randomly stumbled upon him on the streets. After 19 years, he just popped in front of me. And if this was back in the day, I have no idea how would I react to that. He said, "Hi." But because of this speech, because of the video I released, somehow I knew it was about to happen. I was ready. So I invited him for a walk. After 19 years, I saw him for the first time, but it was actually first time in my life I was on a walk with my father. I got to know a little bit about him. And you know what? I think that if we meet a few more times, one day, we might be friends. And that is the power of forgiveness. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? We're talking about cutting off adult children. Now, the various stories, right? The whole world paint this picture of children suffering and children, you know, like children just being, you know, the victims. Mara, we as adult children, we also have a hand to play in the demise of our parents. And we're continuing. First of all, it is emotional abuse, where we emotionally abuse our parents. And then unfair accusations and gaslighting. That is when we unfairly accuse our parents of things and gaslight them, especially in events. Now, if this was my dad, you know, if this guy's dad was my dad, I would blame him for many, many things. I would blame him for every single thing under the sun because, yeah, and I would gaslight him into believing that, yeah, I'm messed up because of you. But the truth is, everybody has a chance. Everybody has a chance to redefine their future. Everybody has a chance to actually make do with what they've got and then also just work with it. All right? Because we saw this guy. And this guy is like, "Yeah, me, I forgave that guy, ne? I forgave that guy. After 19 years of absence, I forgave that man." All right. And then the third one is, part of the reasons that, parents cut off their children is substance abuse, or enabling. When a child's addiction is an ongoing issue and the parents continued financial or emotional support enables destructive behavior. That is a good time for you to cut that child off. Now, this one is a very difficult one, especially for us Africans, because, you know, we believe in Ubuntu, we believe in Unuonu, we believe in Koyokoyara, we believe in Obudina Kutenda, we believe in all of that. But the truth is, when do you choose yourself then? Because it just keeps eating at you like a cancer. It keeps eating and keeps eating and keeps eating and keeps eating until you are a shell of who you used to be. And it's because of your child. And it's not even because your child is a child anymore. Your child is a full-grown adult, but yeah, right? And then boundary violations. That is number four. Repeatedly ignoring established limits and unwilling to respect privacy or over-involvement in the parent's life, over-involvement, especially there by the boy that is raised by a single mother. That one has an over-involvement. By the girl that is raised by a single mother has over-involvement. The girl that is raised by a single father, over-involvement. Over-involvement where you know your parents' lover, where you know they are, where they are going, where you have an opinion in their love life, where you have an opinion in their finances, where you want to monitor, where they are basically the child and you are the adult, but you are, it's actually the other way around. Those are the limitations around boundaries. You understand? And that's number four. And then contempt and disrespect. A consistent pattern of demeaning, shaming, or humiliating communication that makes a unhealthy relationship, a healthy relationship impossible. Huh? Hear that again. A consistent pattern of demeaning, shaming, or humiliating communication that makes a healthy relationship impossible. When your child is insulting you, when your child is telling you nonsense in front of people, when your child is embarrassing you constantly, those are also grounds, ne? And last but not least in this category is conflict. Conflicting core values. Major differences in values or lifestyle choices, e.g. career, religion, political identity, that neither party can reconcile or agree to respectfully disagree. So you can't agree to your dad coming out to you guys as he's now gay. You can't agree to your mom coming out to you guys as she's a lesbian now. You can't agree to your child coming out to you as they are queer, or they are on RDP, or they are Pentecostal, or they don't go to the Catholic Church anymore, or they are not going to be politicians and they're not going to be lawyers, they want to be artists. Now, if this is a conflicting value, core value, then those are also grounds that parents cut off their adult children and say like, yo, you can go live your life now, but I'm just not going to be part of it. And I think that this is an issue of understanding. I think if we respected each other's opinions a little bit more, we would allow people to come to terms with what we are asking them to come to terms with. Because you can't ask an old school guy, Kucha, you must just become accustomed to the fact that I'm attracted to the male species. Now, and how do we forget that? First of all, let's establish what is a... Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk with you, Mr. Assad Amshelelo?
Oh, you want to talk with Mr. Amshelelo? Oh, but it's 10:30.
Okay. This is the number for him, ne?
No. This is the number for Eagle FM.
Oh, okay. Sorry, man.
Okay.
Okay, can he please... can he maybe send for me for his number?
I don't have it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, bye.
Thank you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, the number in studio is 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. That is the number in studio in case you would like to participate. So, first of all, let's go with what makes a great father, what makes a great mother, what makes a great child, and maybe we can understand when boundaries are crossed.
I'm standing in the middle of this circle of men and I feel trapped. There's nowhere to go. And in that moment, one man steps forward and he says to me, he says, "Why are you here?" And in that moment, I'm completely paralyzed. I have no idea what to say or how to respond. I feel completely frozen. And he says to me again, he says, "Why are you here?" And again, I have no idea what to say. And in that moment, everything inside of me is completely frozen. And he takes a step forward, and he puts his hands on my shoulders, and he turns me around to face a man that I have always known, but a man that I have never really known. And in that moment, something inside of me just broke. And I dropped to my knees, and I began to sob like a 6-year-old boy. I began to say over and over again, "Where were you? Where were you? Where were you? Where were you? Where were you?" For about the past 5 years, I have been researching fatherhood. So even though my work started about 5 years ago, it's actually been going on a long, long time. I think my work around fathering began back when I was a little boy. You see, I grew up with a father that was my everyday hero. There were moments where I felt a connection to him, moments where I felt like my dad was the safe person for me in my life. Moments when he would take me to a sporting event or coach a team of mine. Moments where I really felt connected to my dad. And then, when I was about 15 years old, my parents, they separated. And my mother, who had an alcohol prescription drug habit, and my dad, who worked an awful lot, they split. And something inside of me split too. I felt betrayed because the man that was my hero was all of a sudden gone. There were only moments when I felt that connection again. Maybe it was every other weekend. Maybe it was once during the week when he would visit. There were only moments where I felt that sense of connection with him. And then as I got older, I noticed there were some things in my life that started to happen. Problems with my confidence, feeling like I wasn't adequate, like I wasn't good enough. Not knowing what my identity was. Who am I? And then, when I was 22 years old, my father invited me to a men's retreat. Right. And I said, "No, I'm not interested." And then he asked me again. He said, "I really want you to go to this men's retreat." And I agreed. And so I went to this weekend retreat, and it was a lot more than I had bargained for. The focus of the weekend was on helping men trust other men, and it was intense. And there was a moment in this weekend when I was standing in the center of a circle of men all around me, and I wanted to run. And I felt trapped. And in that moment, a man stepped forward, and he said to me, he said, "Why are you here?" I had no idea what to say. I was 21 years old. I had no idea how to answer. He said to me again, he said, "Why are you here?" I had no idea how to respond. And then he stepped forward and he put his hands on my shoulders and he turned me around to face a man that I had always known, but a man that I had never really known, my dad. And he asked me, he said, "What do you have to say to this man?" And in that moment, something inside of me just broke. And I dropped to my knees and I began to sob like a six-year-old boy. And I just said over and over again, "Where were you? Where were you? Where were you? Where were you?" I don't think I'm alone. I think that there are millions of men and women all over this world that have these deep questions in their minds. Questions related to their fathers. Questions like, "Did you want me? Do you approve of me? Why did you hurt me? Do you love me? Do I have your blessing?" These questions that are in the recesses of our minds and we don't think about, and then later they turn into things like addictions or depression. But really, they started a long time ago. And some of you out there might be thinking to yourself, you might be thinking, "I had a great relationship with my father. This doesn't impact me." But you see, as a father researcher, I've learned a lot about fathering. And what I know is that there is an impact for all of us related to fathering. You see, children that grow up with active, engaged fathers are more likely over their lifetimes to make higher levels of income. They're more likely over their lifetime to have higher levels of education. They're more likely over their lifetime to adjust well to situations. They're less likely to have depression, anxiety as adults. They're more likely, if they have an active, engaged fathers, to move past at-risk behaviors like substance abuse and early pregnancy. You see, this impacts all of us. And as a father researcher, there was two areas that I had concern about specifically related to our culture. One is the divorce rate. So I, as a product of divorce, grew up in a family where I got to see my father infrequently. And a lot of children have this experience because judges are more likely to give custody to the mother. And therefore, fathers often have to either fight or they get less time with their children. But the other statistic is about single unwed mothers. And this concerned me even more. Because in 2014, the National Center for Health Statistics reported that 60% of births in our country to women ages 20 to 24 years of age would be and was to single unwed mothers. 40% of births to women of all ages in 2014 was to single unwed mothers. You see, there's a culture here. There's a culture that's happening. And if we don't take a look at how we look at fathering, it will impact all of us. And so, as a father researcher, and as a very young, optimistic guy, I was interested. I was interested in what is it that makes an active, engaged father. And I was soon to be a dad. I knew I was going to have children, and so I was also interested for myself. What is it that I need to know about being a father? And so I created a survey with all the different factors related to what we know works in terms of engaged fathering. Things like what we call co-parenting alliance, and relationship satisfaction, religion, the kind of job people have. And I sent it out across the United States to social service agencies, all across the United States. And I got back all this information. And there was one factor that just rose to the surface. You know what it is? It's the level of confidence a father has in his ability to be a parent. Does he feel like he can handle a situation with his child? Does he feel like he'd be a good model for other parents to look to? Confidence. This was terrible news. This was terrible news. You see, because by this point, I had a little tiny 3-month-old baby girl at home. And I was up at night holding this baby girl, trying to calm her. help my wife, because this little baby girl was a screamer. And she would scream for hours at a time. And we read all the books. We're smart people. We can figure this out. We read all the books. We knew how to swaddle. We knew how to pacify. We knew how to rock. We could figure this out, but she kept screaming. And there was one moment when I'm holding this child, and she's screaming. And I have no idea what to do, and so I finally did what every smart parent does when they don't know what to do. I screamed, too. I screamed. And I screamed because I felt like a complete failure. Like I had not been able to help my child through her distress. And of course, that was when I was relieved of my duties. And so here I am, in distress, feeling like a complete failure because I can't calm this child. There's been so many of these moments. Moments where I felt like my child didn't live up to our expectations and I got angry for really no reason. Moments when I lost it. Moments when I wasn't available when I should have been. Moments when I felt terribly unconfident, like I was a failure. So this was terrible news. So I started to think about, what is it that had positioned me, created me, socialized me to feel so bad about myself as a dad? I mean, I'm an accomplished guy. I've done some good things. And then I realized that my life as a man has been socialized to solve problems. I've been socialized that when there's someone in distress, it's my job to figure it out. I've also been socialized that the outcome is based on my performance, and it's very important that that outcome is good. And that's the way I judge my own performance. Whether it's how many goals I scored in lacrosse when I was in high school, or the kind of car I had, or the kind of money I make, or my education level, all of these have to do with the outcome of my performance. And I realized that I've been socialized away from loving this child in the most distressful, ugly moments because I was trying to fix it. It was then that I realized that fathering is not about my performance. It was about me wholeheartedly loving this child, even in the most difficult moments, without the expectation of what was to come or what I wanted. It was sacrificial. It was vulnerable. It was open. I was there not just to teach about love, but I was also there to exemplify it. To show my child what love looks like. It changed my whole philosophy about what it means to be a dad. And so, what I want to offer is just a few ideas to you. We are all mothers or daughters, fathers or sons. I want to offer you a few ideas to take with you today from a father researcher. The first idea is reflect. Reflect on your relationship with your father. Think about the things you got that you didn't like. Think about the things you missed. Think about the things you got that you did like. Reflect on your relationship with your father. And begin to work through the pain of the past. Because on the other side of working through that pain is forgiveness. And forgiveness is a gateway to confidence. So reflect. The second thing I want to suggest is actually for you mothers out there. It's reinforce. You see, you don't realize it, but you have so much power over the fathering in your household or over the father that is co-parenting your child. We fathers take cues as to what we're supposed to do from you. You will teach us how we're supposed to be involved with our child. And when you tell us that it's important for us to care for that little baby at 2 months old and how much you appreciate that, we will show up. Right? Reinforce us too. Remind us of the good things we do when we do it. One of the things we often do is catch people doing things wrong. I remember when I was newly married, and my wife Lisa and I, we were living together, and my wife loves a clean kitchen. I'm a tidy person. I'm not a clean person. I'm a tidy person. And so I cleaned the kitchen thoroughly. And she came home, and she noticed how clean it was. And she said, "Wow, this is so clean. You did a great job. Thank you." She made a big deal about it. She celebrated me. Guess what I wanted to do? I wanted to clean that kitchen. You see, you catch us doing things right. Remind us of what we're doing right as a father. It'll make us want to do it more. And the third thing is for you men out there. Maybe it's your father, maybe it's your future father. The third thing is check your role. Think about your role. And sometimes we think of fatherhood as an opportunity to be a disciplinarian or a teacher or maybe a provider. That's our role. Consider expanding your role. You're more than that. You're there. You're going to teach your child how to love. Teach them about what it means to be appropriately affectionate. Teach them what it's like to express love. Teach them what it's like about the spiritual and about the connection with something bigger than themselves. Be there in sacrificial moments, even when it means you have to read that Frozen book one more time. So, finally, in sum, I want to take a moment. I want to take just a moment and thank a couple of people that are very important to me. I want to thank someone in my life that has really helped me to reinforce my following. Someone that has been with me through the process. Lisa, would you stand up? I want to thank you for being my partner. I want to thank you for being there with me on this journey. I love you. Thank you for reinforcing me today. And there's... And there's one more person that I want to acknowledge today, and this is somebody that has taught me how to reflect on myself. He has taught me, he's been reinforcing to me as a father, and he's also taught me to expand my role. He's come all the way from North Carolina to be here today. Dad, would you stand up? Dad, I want to thank you for the work we did 20 years ago. I want to thank you for being a father. I want to thank you for being a grandfather. I love you.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabweli nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa vura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've heard amazing stories about about how it has been so amazing and all these children and they are going through the motions, but maybe, just maybe, we need to hear from the adults. Divorcing your adult children.
Are the actions of your adult children keeping you up at night, causing you pain, making you cry? It just might be time to divorce or call it quits on your adult children. Let's talk about that today on Life Starring Deb. Making a difference, and I'm definitely helping out in situations. So I appreciate you. Please keep coming back. Today's episode, I have to tell you, it is a heavy one. Usually, the episodes that I bring you are episodes of things that I deal with or have dealt with or have worked through. Knowledge of certain topics. Today is not that episode. I can tell you right off the top that the thought of divorcing or calling it quits with my adult children is not something that I ever feel like I would want to deal with. And I really don't know how I would handle it if one of my children that are now adults decided that they didn't want to speak to me anymore, or they disowned me, or they washed their hands of me, or whatever. I don't know how I would handle that. But I would have to find a way.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is Dennis Prager's House, Dennis Prager's Fireplace, and Dennis Prager's Ideas. This is the weekly fireside chat. This is very important to me. I travel a tremendous amount, and I still try to make the time to do this. And we almost don't miss a week. Maybe when I do my annual cruise with listeners, I think it's the only time it's almost impossible. Though I have to figure out maybe a fireside chat from Germany. That would be fun. Maybe we could think about that in advance. Anyway, virtually every week, my home to yours. It's all spontaneous, nothing scripted. It's a real good chance to, at least for you, to get to know me better and what I stand for and ultimately what Prager University stands for. But most important, it's an opportunity to just talk about life. And I'm happy if you're 98 and you're watching, I'm happy. And if you're 18 and you're 8, I'm happy. Having said that, there's a very large number of you who are quite young, and that is very important to me. Not because you are more valuable than someone who's 98, but because you are the future. It's not a cliche, it's just a fact. So I have never been a youth worshiper. Even when I was a kid, I remember I was about 21 years old when they made the vote. They changed the vote from 21 to 18. And I remember saying to my girlfriend at the time, I don't know why they're giving us the vote. And I don't know why I said it, because when I look at the date, I wasn't 18. I was 21. But be that as it may, I remember something saying, why are they giving me the vote? I don't know anything. In other words, I knew, or let's put it this way, I truly believed adults were wiser than I was. Which, by the way, is a very good thing for young people to think, because if you're 17 and you think you're wiser than adults, if you're right, you're in really big trouble. Okay? Let me put it to you that way. Let's hope, in fact, the wiser you are at 17, the more you realize a lot of adults are wiser. By the way, a lot of adults are not wiser. This is one of the worst realizations you make when you get older, and if you're 17, you will not have made this, is one day it will hit you, maybe when you're 40, and you will think, there are a lot of dummies who are 40. or even more frightening, there are a lot of 40-year-olds who aren't adults. You become an adult when you decide to act like one. You don't become an adult because you turned a certain age. That's one of the great rules of life. I'm a big one about rules of life. That's called wisdom. I will say, when I was a kid, I loved wisdom. And it was both innate. I just loved it personally. But it was also a big part of the fact that I had a religious education. And that's what religion at its best is about, wisdom. And it's very rarely available outside of religion. Part of the reason that the universities are as an atheist, liberal Harvard professor, Steven Pinker put it, the universities have become laughing stocks. And a big part of the reason is, unlike the way they were founded, where they were founded rooted deeply in studying the Bible and the Greeks, they knew there was wisdom of the past. You don't have that today. I didn't have that either. I didn't get any wisdom at college. I got knowledge, but I got no wisdom. So that's worthy, by the way, that's worthy of a talk, the wisdom issue. But I want to talk to you, especially those of you, those of you who are younger, but actually this might apply to you if you're 50, not just necessarily if you're 18. I have mentioned this, I don't know if I've mentioned this on Fireside, in the Fireside Chats, but I've mentioned this on my radio show. And by the way, if you enjoy this, just know I'm on every day for 3 hours all over the country and all over the world on the internet. So it's very easy to find me on the internet if you can't tune in a local station. And I've talked about this very often on my radio show. There was a terrible crisis in America that I don't know anybody talking about it in large numbers other than myself. That's not a boast. It's a complaint. It's a sad realization. And that is the number of adult children who don't talk to their parents. This is a crisis in the United States. I have asked audiences, raise your hand if you know a family. That way they don't have to be self-conscious. It's not necessarily about them. If I said it was your family, people would be embarrassed to raise their hands. So I asked, if you know a family, then there's no embarrassment. If you know a family wherein an adult child does not speak to one or both parents, raise your hand. And I'm telling you, it's never less than a quarter of the audience, and it's very often a third, sometimes even more than a third of the audience will raise their hands. That's incredible. It should be 1 out of 100, not 30 out of 100. And when I get calls from parents, I get calls from men who start crying on the radio. I mean, that's pretty rare. You know, men don't cry that easily. And by the way, that's a good thing, just for the record. To never be able to cry is a problem. But to cry easily is not masculine, to be honest. Okay? There are exceptions. Winston Churchill cried very often. But they were never about Winston Churchill. When Winston Churchill cried, it was about tragedy that he had seen in World War II or in World War I. So that's different. If you cry for others, I'll give you a pass on that. That could be certainly in keeping with healthy masculinity. Anyway, these fathers will call up and cry that they have a daughter or a son who never talks to them or hasn't talked to them in 15 years. There are people who call my show, tell me that they've never met their grandchildren. I got to tell you, I almost cry, to be honest. I can't think of much in life that could be more painful than that. In some ways, look, there's no pain like the loss of a child. But the pain of the loss of a living child can rival it. you had a child who loved you and then, you know, had cancer at 50, it's horribly painful to lose that child, but you have all that love and bonding as a memory, and you have presumably their children as grandchildren, but to have none of that? So what is going on here? It can't be that the parents of the last generation were so awful that there are all these adult children, you know, from 18 to 58 who have been so molested and so abused, unlike the past, that all of a sudden we have this eruption of adult children who don't speak to a parent. It can't be that the parents were all that worse. Something else has happened here. And I think there are a lot of things involved here. One is narcissism. I just think my generation, the baby boomers, was ushered in a narcissism that has not escaped since then. Our parents' generation was the generation of World War II. And I wasn't born then, but my father fought in it. And this was a generation called the Greatest Generation. It was known for giving of themselves. The country called, they answered, they were heroic. And then they produced the most narcissistic generation. That doesn't mean everybody in my generation is a narcissist, obviously. I'm generalizing because it's generalizable. And then narcissists produce narcissists and so on. It's for most people, not all, everything has exceptions. There are sometimes, if your parent has been evil, I will come back to that. If your parent has truly been evil, okay. You know what? Most parents are not evil. They're flawed. Almost every parent is flawed as a human and as a parent. But evil? There's something else that has happened. And that is, this is my theme. What has happened is the most secular generation in American history, compared to all other generations before it, was my generation, the baby boomers. And now it's even more secular. You know, you have religious and nuns, N-O-N-E-S. And how many millennials will say they're nuns? I mean, no religion, the nun, N-O-N-E. But my generation was the baby boomer generation, the post-World War II generation, was the most secular, least religious ever. And I think that's the biggest single factor. So I want to give my own example as the example. Like many people, not all by any means, I had issues with my parents when I was in my teen years and in my early 20s. But there was, first, to say that there was never a time I didn't talk to my parents, it never even occurred to me I'm going to stop talking to my parents. And I'll explain why, because that's the punchline here. But not only that, there was never a time that they even really knew I had these issues, because I treated them with honor and respect at all times. When I left my parents' home at the age of 21, permanently, you know, living on my own, I called my parents every week of their lives till they died, at the ages of 96 and 89, respectively. There wasn't a week that I missed. It was just a given. I would call them up. And why? Even when I had difficulties with them, why did I do that? There was a reason. I know the reason. There were two reasons. The biggest reason was I actually believed that God gave the Ten Commandments, and in those Ten Commandments is a commandment, honor your father and mother. It doesn't say honor your father and mother if you really like them, honor your father and mother if things are going well. It also doesn't say love your father and mother. One of the reasons I'm crazy about the Bible is, back to my first theme, wisdom. There is a commandment to love your neighbor as yourself, to love God, and to love the stranger. But there's no commandment to love your parents. You don't have to love your parents. You have to show them respect. You have to honor them. In fact, they're the only creature you have to honor. The word honor does not appear as a command to any other creature in the world. Just parents. That's how important that is. Now, okay, so you'll say, well, what if my father molested me sexually, raped me, boy or girl for that matter? Okay. Folks, bad, what is it? What does this, what a lawyer say? A bad something make bad laws, or a bad situation, or whatever it is. In other words, you can't make any law if you have to include every possibility. My best example is not to do with law. It's seatbelts save lives. Well, you'll say, but wait a minute. I read about a case where somebody was killed precisely because they wore a seatbelt, which I have, by the way. It happens. Where in a crash, it actually gets locked in to the buckle gets locked in to the fastener, whatever it is, and they die of smoke inhalation or actually get burned alive in the car because they can't escape the seatbelt. Does that mean that seatbelts don't save lives? Seatbelts save lives. You've got to honor your parents. Are there exceptions? Just as there are exceptions to the seatbelt, there are. I understand that. But it's very, very rare. As I said, your parent has to be evil, not mistaken, not weak, not flawed, and a whole host of other things. I believe that. I believe that there is a God in the universe who makes moral demands on me. And if you don't believe that, that's a problem. Because if God doesn't make moral demands on you, who does? You? Okay, I don't trust people nearly as much as the secular trust people, because I know human nature too well. So I think it's better to feel that there is a God, a good God, a just God who makes commandments of me, than I just have to answer to Dennis. Okay, because Dennis can manipulate Dennis all he wants. But the other way, it's much harder. So the combination of narcissism, everything revolved around this generation. That's what the parents of the World War II crowd, the World War II parents, raised the next generation where everything revolved around them to a large extent. And it's gotten even worse with helicopter parents. And, you know, we don't want you to walk alone at the age of 10, you know, lest you be attacked. And it can only create a narcissism. I should talk about this once. It would just be interesting to those of you who are quite young, you know, you teenagers, and those of you in your 20s and 30s, you would find fascinating the difference in the way kids are brought up today, or you were brought up. Everyone I know was told by their parents very infrequently, everyone in my generation, we were told by our parents very infrequently, I love you. Okay? It was very rare. My parents never came to any of my basketball. They came to one, excuse me, one. I played in Madison Square Garden once. I grew up in New York, and I played in Madison Square Garden for 56 seconds. My high school team played a game before a Knick game. And when the coach realized it was mathematically impossible for us to win, he put me in, he was right, by the way. I was not a good player. I was just so tall that they put me on the team because I could actually move. Anyway, they never came to any of the games. I never expected my parents to come to my games. Here's the amazing thing. I actually didn't want them to come to my games because I wanted to be Mr. Independent and not somebody's son. Mommy's watching me. I would have felt funny. Oh, there's my mom. I'm not saying you should feel funny. I'm only explaining the differences that existed. But it wasn't a child-centered world as much as it became later. But it was more so than my parents had, which was completely non-child-centered. So the narcissism and the elimination of religious demands, like honor your father and mother, that has resulted, I believe, in this phenomenon of people not speaking to their parents. I mean, never. I don't mean less frequently. I don't mean strained relations. I mean no relations. They basically have said I died. There was a man who called my show just a couple of weeks ago who told me, he's a very nice man, a very nice sounding guy, he agreed with me on everything. And in passing, he happened to mention to me that he and his wife are so angry at her parents that they have not spoken to them in, I don't know, 20 years, and they've never seen their grandchildren. And I said, well, why? And he said, well, because they wanted their daughter to leave the marriage early on. And I made a big mistake. I should have said, well, why did they want that? I don't usually make these mistakes on the radio, but that was a mistake. I was so annoyed with him about that. I said, I don't understand. What did they do to deserve? Let's say they were totally wrong. They wanted their daughter to divorce you. Okay, let's say. Let's say they were totally wrong. You are wonderful, and she is wonderful, and you have a great marriage, and for some crazy irrational reason, they wanted their daughter in the early years of your marriage to leave you. Let's say all of that is true. I would like to hear their side. I'm always aware on radio I only hear one side. But let's say that's true. They still don't deserve the fate they got. And if he was not a religious guy, and he did not feel that God said to him, honor your father and mother. He was just so annoyed with them, they never got to see their grandchildren. It seems to me that that's overkill. That's like, you know, shooting the proverbial mosquito with a cannonball. They should have been told off. They should have been told, you know, this is an alienating thing. Nevertheless, you know, we're not going to be coming over every Sunday and so on, but... You'll never see your grandchildren. It almost made me think maybe the parents were right. Maybe the daughter should have left this guy. If my wife were super duper angry at her parents, I would tell her, honey, they're still your parents. We can't deprive them of their grandchildren or for that matter of us. A woman called me many years ago when I first began raising this issue on the radio from Santa Monica, California. And those of you who know Santa Monica, it didn't shock me. There are a lot of wonderful people in Santa Monica. Okay, I know that. But there's a lot of narcissism, too. Anyway, so she called. She said, Dennis, you ask people who don't speak to their parents to call in. I'm 25. I don't speak. Or 28. She was in her between 25 and 30. I never speak to my mother. I go, really? Did she abuse you? Oh, no. She never abused me. She didn't abuse you physically or sexually or verbally? No. In fact, she really loved me. And I remember thinking, there's something wrong here. Her mother loved her, and she doesn't speak to her mother ever? So, of course, I posed the question. I said, I don't understand. Your mother loved you, showed you love. And you never talked to her? That's right. I said, why not? So she said, because if I let her into my life, she would dominate it. She's a dominating woman. So I said, you don't talk to your mother ever because she has a dominating personality? Isn't the answer, don't let her dominate? The answer is not play dead. Isn't that like overkill? And then, for me, the punchline came next. I said, am I correct in just assuming that you've discussed this with a therapist? She said, yes, I've discussed this with my therapist a lot. And I'll bet you your therapist agrees with you not to talk to your mother. That's right. And that's one of the examples I have of where therapists actually do harm, not good. Some therapists are great, most are not. A good therapist would try to reconcile the daughter and the mother, not say, oh, that's great, never talk to your mother. So something to think about. And by the way, just on a selfish grounds, if you ever plan on having children, maybe what goes around comes around. Maybe if you mistreat your parent, they might do the same. After all, those kids who never see their grandparents are going to grow up one day. And they're going to wonder, gee, why did my parents never let me see my grandparents? That's not a good model to offer your children. Okay, time for Q&A. Thank you, Megan. All right, Patrick, 16 years old, Ventura, California. What inspired you to create PragerU? To be precise, well, I guess I did create it, but it wasn't my idea. So, yes, I created it with him, but it was not my idea. It was completely Alan Estrin's idea. And almost out of nowhere, he just suggested, you know what, I think we should start a Prager University. We were actually on one of my listener cruises somewhere in the world when he said that. And since Alan never tells jokes, never, okay, never means never. That's not his personality. He neither tells them nor laughs at them. I love ribbing him. Anyway, Alan said that to me. So since I know he never jokes, I thought, okay, Alan, it's a great idea. Let's start Prager University. And I just figured nothing will happen. But he is a very serious man.
I bought a life insurance policy for my son when he was 25, 26 years old, so I could afford to bury him. Because I knew he wasn't going to live. I knew he was going to die. He was going to kill himself. Drugs, motorcycle, something. So I remember sitting there thinking, this is just not how it's supposed to be. This is not how parenting is supposed to be.
Welcome to the Focus on the Family broadcast, helping families thrive.
John, a significant part of what we do every day here at Focus is to encourage and empower parents. We want to help you. That's the bottom line. Mom and Dad, we're here for you as you partner with God to do the best job possible with your children. And now we're aware that some family situations are more difficult than others, and we often hear from you about where your children are at, especially the 20, 30-somethings, adult children who maybe launched well, maybe haven't launched so well. Maybe they didn't get accepted into college, or maybe they're in a slump with the job market, or maybe there's been an issue through the teen years and that has now imploded in their 20s. Whatever it might be, we're here for you.
And this is a concern, adult kids. This is something every parent can relate to at some point in time, the fear that my child is going to fail to launch. They're going to get stuck somewhere in that transition to adulthood. We all know families where the adult kids are still living at home and the parents are still wondering, will they ever leave? Or, like my family, it's been a revolving door. They leave and then they come back and then they leave again. It can be a trying time.
Yeah, maybe your young adult or someone you know's young adult is a prodigal, or they're choosing a lifestyle that's contrary to how you raise them. That often is the conflict. There may be addiction or something worse. Whatever the issue is, we know it's breaking your heart as a parent. And again, we at Focus are here to help. Today, we're going to explore how you can love those adult children well, even when it's hard going through it. Our guest is Allison Botke, and she has firsthand experience in this area. Her personal story is dramatic, and while some details may not directly apply to your situation, she has some great parenting advice and wisdom to share with all of us.
And Allison is a popular author and speaker. She's written more than 32 books, and the one we're going to be referring to today is called Setting Boundaries with Your Adult Children, Six Steps to Hope and Healing for Struggling Parents. Get in touch for a copy and let us know if we can be of any help. We do have caring Christian counselors here as well. Our number is 800, the letter A in the word family, or click the link on your screen.
Allison, welcome to Focus on the Family. Well, welcome back, really.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
It's good to have you back. Let's start with that failure to launch concept. We're seeing that is growing in our culture today. Why do you think this is a growing problem for today's families?
A lot of it's financial. You know, the financial challenges that young people have on the outside, whether they've not budgeted well, and that happens a lot. They don't know how to live. They don't know how to financially mm-hmm. budget their lives. So they come back home. And it's, you know what? It becomes so easy. Parents have allowed this, and why not? Why not go back home if I'm going to have my rent paid and my electricity paid right. and food and somebody's going to cook for me? And it's a double-edged sword there. Yeah.
We know all parents, I think, have that, especially with your junior and senior in high school. I mean, I'm in that spot right now. I've got a senior in high school, and I thankfully have one who's 2 years into his journey with college. But you do begin to wonder, are we going to get there? How's that launch platform going to go? You know, the steam and the combustible engines and all those things you need.
And it may not even be that there's a failure to launch. It's just a shift in our economy, a shift in lifestyle. It's not always a bad thing to have adult children living at home. Mm-hmm. If it's an equitable situation, if it's everyone's helping each other and boundaries aren't being stepped on, and we've spent generations used to live together,
yeah.
you know, multi-generations. So it's only been in modern times that these kids, you know, are pushed out like this. You know, we expect them to be out on their own. Some instances that might not be a possibility.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And mm-hmm. we're going to talk more about how to create something that's constructive for everybody.
That's the
but
key.
We want to talk about the issues before that, you know, and sometimes parents can create this problem, at least contribute to it, correct?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's certainly something that can happen, and you can actually cause things to go worse than you anticipated. How do parents contribute negatively to their children's failure to launch?
They become that safe landing place for them and don't want them to feel pain.
That sounds so right, though.
So it's, yeah, exactly, but it's not helpful. Everything good grows out of pain. It's like physical therapy. You're not going to get healthier if you've got an injured bone until you go through physical therapy, and it's painful. Life spurts, growing is painful sometimes. How else do we learn consequences? This is really the key that parents are challenged with. They don't allow their children to experience the consequences of their actions.
You've got a couple of stories in this way. I think you call it enabling parents in training. So what are those stories? Just get our listeners and viewers up to speed.
I think finding myself dealing with boundaries as much as I do, I'm just very aware when boundaries are an issue. I was at a store once and saw a woman who's obviously frazzled. I could see a customer was in front of her. She could have got rid of her, and I was standing there, and I said, "Are you okay?" And just to say that, she
lost it.
Yes, and she's, "No, I'm not. I'm so mad. I'm so angry." And she just started talking about her family and her kids, and she loans them money, and they don't pay her back, and they'll say, "Can I borrow a 10? She gives them a 20 and never sees change. And I asked questions. I said, "Well, why do you do that? If he is consistently doing that, why do you continue to give him money?" "Well, because," and then this one, excuses. And her husband was the same way. He didn't clean. He didn't help in the house. She's working. They own the business. And it was just a litany of anger.
And it's yet, like resentment, yes.
Resentment, anger, and when it comes down to it, I said, "You know, well, you can make different choices." and she kind of looked at me, and it went like right over her head that she could do anything different. Was hard for her to realize.
What did you have in mind for her?
And I would think sanity. She needed sanity. She needed to stop doing what she was doing, and really get around some supportive people to talk about this. Otherwise, right. I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows whether she's going to burn out, or I don't know what the children were like, if they were at all respectful or dangerous.
Right. What's the other story?
So I was standing in line at a sandwich shop, and there was a mom and a son in front of me, and he was, I would say, maybe 17.
Yep.
It's hard to tell. But he had a coupon in his hand. He was reading it, and he couldn't understand really what it meant. And I heard him talk to her. He said, what do you suppose this means for the sandwich?" She said, "Well, I don't know. When you get up there, ask him." So I'm watching them. They get up to the counter, and he speaks up. He started to speak up and said, "You know, what does this?" And she jumped right in and
took
said,
over.
It took over the whole conversation, and I watched him physically just shrink.
Yeah.
You know, and my heart ached for him too. I thought, "You know, Mom, you're giving mixed messages here. You're telling him go ahead and ask, which is good. This is how he learned. And yet you don't trust him enough. Or maybe is it trust? What is the issue? You don't think he can speak for himself? That you just are in such a hurry that you want to just, what? I don't know what it is. But I saw that and thought, boy, that young man now is learning. And how many times has she done that? So how hard will it be for him to launch, to trust himself that he knows what to ask or to do?
Well, and those are great everyday examples of the way we parent that is setting the platform to not launch. Let's get that definition of enabling versus helping. I mean, I think with parents, that's where that tough line is. And I don't even know if there's a clear distinction, but what would you suggest to parents to understand what is helpful help and what is enabling or counterproductive help?
I've always said that helping is doing something for someone that they can't do for themselves. So you help them. Enabling is doing something for someone that they can and frankly should be doing for themselves.
Right.
You know, I often use the example of a young child learning to tie their shoes. You know, you're helping them by tying it for them and showing them how to do this. But if they're 10, 12 years old and just don't want to tie their shoes and you're bending down to tie their shoes for them, something is wrong with this picture.
Right.
So they can do it on their own. So it's really looking at what they are capable of doing. And this is a big issue. We don't really know what our kids are capable of doing because we've done it for them so often.
And you know, some listeners, they may have 20 something kids and they're doing well. They're off to college or whatever it might be. I want to kind of give a contour of this out of the statistics. I think Pew Research Center in 2016 identified that 15% of 25 to 35 year old millennials were living in their parents' homes, which was a higher rate than Generation Xers in 2000. Between 2005 and 2010, more than 20% of 25-year-old high school graduates who never attended college were not employed or in the military. For those with some college, employment rates were slightly higher. But basically, it's like an 80-20 rule. There's about 20% of 20-somethings that aren't launching well. Does that sound about right?
It does. And a lot of that, I keep coming back to that, financial issues. A lot of them are, education's expensive. So they may not be able to afford to live on their own.
Sure.
However, the caveat to that is a lot of these young people are, you know, driving very fancy vehicles that they've managed to pay for, you know, and very fancy electronic devices. And, you know, and so your parents are funding a lifestyle. And that's the problem. And it doesn't always happen that way. Like I said, there are parents that understand those boundaries and the kids are home and for whatever reason, again, whether it's financial, maybe it's emotional, maybe they have a breakup. You know, young people, especially these young men, I'm learning, they have breakups that devastate them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a divorce or just a breakup from a girlfriend, it's.
Yeah, you know, Allison. So often, the older I get, the simpler some things get. When I look at Scripture and I see the metaphors of what God is talking to us about, He uses marriage as a metaphor. He's the bride, we're the bridegroom, those kinds of things. And specifically when I look at parenting, of course, we're made in His image. So my thought is some of our desires are from God's heart. And then some of those things that are maybe unhealthy are from the sin that enters our heart in this world, right? So when I look at the parenting approach, I feel like when we're trying to give good things to our children, that is a personality of God. In other words, it says in Scripture, He too wants to give good things to His children. But there is also the side of God that He allows us to go through valleys to grow, to gain wisdom, to better appreciate the good things that we have in life when they come our way. How do we as parents pull back from the rescue mentality? I mean, oftentimes, think about it. Spiritually, we will pray, God, help us out of the situation. And then we're frustrated that God has not helped us out of that situation. We might even go as far as asking, are you truly there, God? Don't you know this situation that I'm in? And like a good parent, he's, yeah, but I think you're going to learn something good through this. You allude to that in parenting, but it's so hard for us to let our adult children, particularly, again, 20, 30-somethings, walk through a valley where they've got to figure out how to get out of it, even though we could jump in. We can help them out of our retirement account if it's financial. Yes. We can help them But restraint is often the wiser choice.
Yes, it is. And that's where we need people around us to hold us accountable, to that we can really share these challenges that we have with. If it's a hole in our heart that we're trying to fill, we've got to look at that and pray for wisdom and discernment to shine the light on us. And that's the key right there, to be able to see how to respond to your child in a positive way. You really have to turn the light on you and say, what is it about me, God? Instead of praying, oh, my son needs this, or my daughter needs this, or Lord, give me the insight and the wisdom to know what I have to change about myself.
Yes, but I'm getting more to, I'm thinking more of the allowing your children to suffer consequences for their decisions. And that should really start when they're young, but we bail them out because we don't want to see them suffer.
And why do we bail them out? Because there's something.
Right.
We haven't learned the right parenting skills in many instances. You know, a lot of us don't know what, this is a job that we don't even get education for. Our parents just are dropped into parenthood.
Yeah. Allison, it's hard.
Yes,
I gotta tell you, you're calloused as a mom. You're not gonna bail. He's supposed to bring brownies to the school luncheon and you didn't
exactly
make them.
Exactly, boy. It's, and the guilt, don't we have guilt? You know?
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
How to get over the guilt and the fear.
Yeah, this is Focus on the Family, with Jim Daly. Our guest is Allison Botke, and she's written this great book, Setting Boundaries with Your Adult Children, and we've got copies of that. Click the link on your screen or call 800-A-FAMILY.
You know, I think it's really helpful for people to understand from your own experience, you know, the things that God taught you. Help us understand the background of factors that led to the troubles that you experienced with your son. You've stated it started with your own rough upbringing. What happened for you? What were those triggers for you?
For me, well, I was raised in a very poor family as well. My parents were divorced. I had a single mom, three siblings. I was the middle child. I was, you know, the middle child.
You were the overlooked child.
I know. Yeah, I laugh about it. Yeah. But I didn't know I was poor. You know, you don't know you're poor when there's other things. And my mom was a, you know, great provider.
Right.
But she got very sick, and I was sent to foster care. And during foster care, I was abused and beaten. My brother was, too. So it was a horrible situation. We were gone. She was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and we were in a foster home for two weeks.
Just 2 weeks.
Just 2 weeks. But had the police not found me, the foster parents left my brother and I in an abandoned house. They were gone.
How old are you at this point?
I was 5 years old.
Yeah. And your brother was younger?
My brother was a couple months old in a...
Wow.
In a crib. And they found me locked underneath the stairwell. And my eyes were punched shut. I don't remember any of this. But I had a fear of the dark, horrible fear of the dark.
Sure.
And really grew up not understanding what that fear came from, but also being in a broken home. You know, that love of a father was really, we all need that. And I didn't have that from an earthly father. And I didn't grow up in a Christian family. So I didn't have that love of a heavenly father. And I wanted to fill that with something. So I was one of those, you know, young people that went off and ran away and got married. I was 15,
very young.
15 years old.
Yeah. Oh, really?
And it was because I knew I was strong-willed. You know, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. This man was a wonderful human being. He was, you know, we belonged together.
This man who was 16?
Actually, he was 18.
Okay.
He was an older man.
Right.
The older man. It was a nightmare. He turned out to be incredibly abusive.
Right.
The first time he hit me was the day we were married. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. What is happening here? So my whole life and issues was all caught up in how I responded to people and how I needed and wanted love and how I perceived love, what that was to me. And control was a big issue. Being able to, you know, be so out of control with that, with abuse, it's a horrible thing to experience that and be able to become strong enough to get out of that relationship. And I had my son. I had my son when I was 16. And I vowed I was going to be, you know, a great mom and take care of him and do everything I, you know, could to take care of him. And to me, that equated to money. A lot of it was money.
Yeah, and Allison, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. I mean, my heart goes out to you because of those experiences. No child should ever...
gameno joma uyerere goko marungura kalishi ashike upsa kadhi opau teknika oliriwo omkundu opashigwana upsa kadhi opaliko no hashivuro okuya moshipara uhupiro uongeshefa oshinimo mtumba go Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition omvoma ovigaje miongo mbali na hamano ikondo epangero mahangano opau mwene uministeri wepangero ni ikondo ya yoroka no handimwe onetamu isanwa muhoroke komtumba omtitatu watumburwa metetekero esikwa milongo mbali na gali siko mbali na ganega apiriri mwavigali milongo mbali na hamano ekaroko Arembush Travel Lodge movenduka oshiparashi kundathanwa okuanja gane kuyerele kombinga uko shoki wopa ungomba ano cyber hygiene kene una okuironge kithira omashongo koko marungura no marongo kekopopeko jerongizo jo marungura na ilwe inji koneka omahangano ohandimwe ni ikondo mbokata mkatuma akaliripo ya konda pantu ya tano otamukapewa ompito yo mtugumwe awedhwa po hasho ashikeshoka pethimbo jo mtumba ogo tungoka otakukakara o VIP cyber gala dina nuyere lounji wa maisha angizo no mapurapuro kwa tathana nayo konoraje tatu imwe onda tu ya tano omgoigeali nenge ko email info@dstech.com.na nenge utarelepo epanja jao jopa ungomba ko www.dstech.com.na Namibia International Cyber Security Conference and Exhibition, Securing Namibia Digital Future.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are diving into the world of the parents because many a times we miss that our parents are also people.
Experience that. And seriously, but it does create some formative inputs for you. And I can only imagine, you know, your greatest goal as a mom was not to let your son suffer in any way.
Exactly.
And so the basis is right, but then the outcome can be really wrong, right?
Exactly. And it's amazing how many parents do have skeletons in their closet as young people. We don't all grow up in perfect families, and how we become parents and how we learn that role is very tied into our youth, how we were raised, what we're filling or not filling in our heart.
Going back to that question of enabling versus helping in a loving way, what were those things specifically with your son that you think back on now that you enabled him, that it actually worked against him?
For me, I think it was making excuses for the trouble he was getting into and the...
What did that sound like in your head when he got into trouble? What did you say to yourself?
Well, we were living in Southern California, Huntington Beach. He was a young kid that got caught up in the punk crowd and very anarchistic movement. You know, it was all anti-establishment, and he would get thrown out of school. He'd play hooky. I'd make excuses. Well, you know, the teachers don't understand him, or they don't really appreciate his intellect,
What was the breaking point between you and your son? What was that incident that arrested your attention and you went, uh-oh, we've got a lot of work in front of
arrest,
us?
Arrest, that's a good term, arrested, because my son was arrested, and it was New Year's Eve. Actually, back he had a horrible motorcycle accident. Almost killed himself. He was metal pins in his arms and in his legs. He was lucky to be alive and got caught back up in the drug movement. But see, again, it was pain management. Opioids were so prescribed. So there he is, back into drugs again. The SWAT team broke into his house and arrested him. And I got a call because my name was on his lease. I paid for the house for a lease. I put my name on it. And it was a nightmare when I walked into that house after a SWAT team. You see it on TV, but you can't comprehend what it's like in reality. And the house itself was a trash can. I mean, there were just bottles everywhere. It was New Year's Eve. There would have been a party there. I walked in there. I thought, this is, no human being should live like this. Mm. But then the connection to me really was that I put my name on the lease. I paid for this. It's not this mess I'm looking at. I'm financially liable.
So that's one enabling right there.
Oh my gosh. Big enabling. And that woke me up in a way that, you know, I don't know that I'd ever really realized before. You know, so I'm standing there at the sink, dumping out liquor into his sink, looking out this window that was broken because that's where they threw the smoke bomb in the window. The whole house smelled acrid, like chemicals from the SWAT teams, thinking, how does somebody live like this? Hmm. You know, and that connection was just so hard for me to make that Chris, my son's Chris, was back into this lifestyle again. Why couldn't he get off that gerbil wheel? But it wasn't just why couldn't he get off the gerbil wheel, why couldn't I get off of it? Yeah. And I realized at that point I had to stop. I had to completely stop. And that's where my sanity steps came. I had to stop doing what I was doing and figure out why I was doing it. And no more focusing on him. I wasn't going to bail him out either. The last time I bailed him out.
I think, you know, that's where we're going to come back next time and speak to those things that you learned, the acronym SANITY and what that stands for. And that's really the basis of your book, trying to help parents be better equipped than you were as they begin to face these difficulties with their, I would say, codependent adult children and what they're getting out of the relationship with mom and dad. So let's do that. At the end here, Allison, without knowing those things, I'm mindful that we have pretty much ripped a Band-Aid off of some parents that are listening, that they have that 20-something child. And perhaps it is a prodigal child. Perhaps it is related to drug abuse or some of those extreme behavioral things that some people get themselves into.
I got a call because my name was on his lease. I paid for the house for a lease. I put my name on it. And it was a nightmare when I walked into that house after a SWAT team. You see it on TV, but you can't comprehend what it's like in reality. And the house itself was a trash can.
Welcome to the Focus on the Family broadcast, helping families thrive.
John, my heart aches for parents like Allison who have struggled to raise and encourage and support their children, yet nothing seems to help these young adults succeed by whatever measure we're measuring that by. Maybe you know what that's like. Maybe you're in that period of your life where your adult children are struggling and you're not quite sure what to do. You may have a prodigal who's walked away from their faith. That's probably the scariest position a Christian parent can be in. Or your adult child is living with their boyfriend or girlfriend, another common phenomenon, whether you're in the church or outside the church. Maybe they're still living in your home and seem to have no motivation, no plans for moving out, and you're worried about that future. We know a lot of families are in that boat, maybe not in the same area of the sea where the storm is really cooking, but you're heading toward that difficult area. As we shared last time, we want to help you change the dynamic of what's going on in your family. That means identifying the problems, recognizing the mistakes you've made in the past as a parent, and then developing a plan of action to create healthy boundaries and ultimately entrust your adult child into God's hands. We had a great conversation with Allison Botke last time, and I'm looking forward to more of this today and more of the solution that she's written in a great book called Setting Boundaries with Your Adult Children, 6 Steps to Hope and Healing for Struggling Parents. And we're going to cover those 6 steps today.
Yeah, and if you'd like to get a copy of Allison's book, we do have that, of course, here at Focus on the Family. Our number is 800, the letter A, and the word family. Or click the link on your screen.
Allison, welcome back to Focus on the Family.
Thank you for having me.
We shared part of your story last time about how your son Christopher struggled with drugs and the wrong friends and all those things that we as parents are concerned about. It actually even led to illegal activity and various other problems throughout his young adult life. You've admitted or talked about what you did to enable him over the years as a loving mom, trying to help him the best way that you knew how. I think all of us as parents have that part of our heart that we're saying, yes, we want to help. Some may have a better guard about whether that help will be the best thing for that child, or if withholding some of that help could be the better wisdom. And we mentioned that last time. You finally came up with a strategy for parents who are in that same trap that you found yourself in. And it's based on a word that you've come up with called sanity. I love that. We all need sanity as parents. and we're going to hit that today. Let's start with that quick overview. What does SANITY, the acronym, what does it stand for?
SANITY is what we get when we learn how to set healthy boundaries and live a life that pleases God. So for me, I was going through the insanity, the gerbil wheel of insanity that really motivated me to think, okay, I want off this gerbil wheel of insanity. What do I need to do? And at that moment, I didn't think of sanity steps. It was, I have to stop. I have to stop what I'm doing right now. I have to stop behaving the way I am. I have to stop my actions. So I wrote down stop. So it was a whole process, Jim, though, to go through finding these sanity steps. I knew I had to stop repeating the same behavior and expecting different results. And I knew I needed help. I needed to be around people that would hold me accountable, that I could learn from and grow from. I started therapy. I started really reading everything I could on boundaries. I didn't realize the issues I had. So right. I needed to be around. So that A was assemble supportive people. And I wrote assemble people. Nip excuses in the bud. I had to stop making excuses, not just for my son's behavior, but my own.
Right.
So that was, okay, nip excuses. And I had to implement some kind of a plan. I'm a proactive woman. I was a businesswoman. I said, okay, I can do this. I need a plan. I need a plan of action. I need something tangible that I can look at and write down and actually do. Steps that, something that I can, that's tangible. So that was implement a plan. T was trust the spirit. I had to trust that God was in control, and I so often went over him.
Yes.
When the SWAT team raided my son's house and I was standing there dumping out liquor, I heard the voice of God say, stop, stop, stop. You can't do this. I think, okay, I can't. I have to stop this. I have to trust that voice. And a lot of parents, and I found this to be very true, a lot of parents will say, I knew I was doing something wrong. I knew it wasn't right. I knew I should have stopped. I knew when he asked me for more money, I shouldn't have given. But I just didn't listen to that. So we're praying for wisdom and discernment. We need to listen when it comes. Yeah. So that's the trust. And wise, yield everything to God. That doesn't mean give up. Doesn't mean give up and just toss it in the towel, but it means trusting that he knows best. And if I'm leaning on him and praying for wisdom and discernment, I need to follow that growth that I'm going through. And experience the pain. I needed to experience the pain so my son could eventually experience it. And that's a hard thing. To trust that God's going to take care of him.
Right, and that would be the most difficult, I think, for any of us as parents. But let's now go back and let's dissect all this, because I think this is the helpful part of the two-day program. And I want to make sure we do put thoughts and good ideas forward for the parents who are struggling. Starting back with S for stop negative behavior, give examples of what parents are doing wrong to enable their adult children.
Stop the flow of money is a big one. For things that have to stop, it's very individual for all of us. We're not all making these, you know, the like mistakes. But typically the big ones are stop the flow of money, stop making excuses, stop coming to the rescue, you know, and stop being a landing pad for your child. You know, stop your own, the big stop is your own. Stop your own issues. Stop your own swooping in. Stop your own fear. If you can stop fear, if you can stop being a prisoner to fear and guilt.
Let's move to A in insanity. The A stands for assemble a support group. Why is this critical for parents who are struggling, and what do these support groups look like?
See, accountability is a key factor here. If that's in your church family, a lot of parents don't want to bring up the challenges that we're having with our kids, especially if drugs are involved or incarceration, or if the kids are in and out of jail, if they're in and out of relationships. I've talked to parents who have daughters who have 3, 4, 5 kids, all by different fathers. You know, so it's a nightmare what a lot of parents are living with right now.
You know, often, Allison, I talk about that as chaos.
It is
chaos. You know, we have a great series by Ray Vanderlaan talking about That the World May Know, and Ray's a good friend. And that's one of the teaching points that he'll provide, that Jesus came to bring God's shalom, his peace.
Yes.
To a world of chaos, and chaos entered the world when sin entered the world. And that's what you're describing, just this everyday chaos. that begins to occur.
Insanity.
Group, I can imagine that some of these parents, we feel like we're learning this almost just experientially, and it's, you get into a corner of a room and you say, hey, are you experiencing this with your adult child? And yeah, by the way, I am. And, you know, and then you start to figure out, wow, that's not working very well. But it is almost like a code of some sort between parents, because we don't know if we're doing it well or not doing it well.
And especially there's such a pressure in Christian families that we feel we're supposed to be behaving in a certain way and our kids aren't supposed to be doing this. And, you know, I was a young believer when I was in church realizing, and I looked around and said, nobody around me could possibly have a son like mine. You know, he's in and out of jail and the situation, but once I started talking about it, I was stunned at how many people said, yeah, I'm at that same place. Mm. So when you can be around other people and realize you're not alone.
Allison, let's go to N for sanity. It stands for nip excuses in the bud. What are some of those typical excuses a dysfunctional adult child will try to use on their parents?
Well, they've become, sadly, become master manipulators in many instances.
What does that look like? I think I know it. But
yeah, it's like, I couldn't get to work because my car broke down because I didn't have the money to fix my car, so I didn't go to work, so I need you to loan me this money so I can get this. And it's one excuse after another. You know, you can take a bus, walk, do something. You can get there if you need to go. So that nip excuses is a big one for me, with my son when he was in his 20s and early 30s, was the cell phone. I paid for his cell phone, and it got to be very expensive. And he, of course, told me he would pay me back. That happened multiple times. I didn't get paid back, and there I am, you know, in major debt, paying for this. But like, the excuse was, if he doesn't have a phone, he can't call me, or I won't be able to know if he's safe or not. You know, like he ever really called me a lot on this phone. You know, it was, I'm paying for it, but I didn't hear from him for, you know, so excuses are, they're rampant.
What did, in that regard, with nipping it in the bud, you were in the courthouse and you had a realization about how oblivious Christopher was to your pain.
Yes.
What happened in that courthouse that caught your attention?
I am a very emotional person, and I was sitting there watching him go through this, watching they walked him out with the shackles and the orange suit, and I started to cry, and I'm trying, you know, I'm not like weeping crazily, but I'm, you know, definitely sad. And I found out later that he'd called a friend of mine and said that I was just trying to get sympathy, that I was just trying to, you know, make it all about me. And I said, I don't understand this, because it's not all about me. I'm caring for you. I'm sad at what's happening. But at that point, I'd stopped bailing him out. He knew he was there. I wasn't bailing him out.
Mm, so he was trying to maybe manipulate you.
Exactly. So there was a, you know, it all gets so convoluted when we've been on this gerbil wheel of insanity for so long, to extricate ourselves from this and really step back and look at what the next steps are is critical, because we're caught up in the chaos and the insanity. We're caught up in fixing. We're caught up in the fear and the shame and the guilt. And until, that's where S comes in, until we can stop and step back, we're not going to be able to nip any excuses. We're not going to be able to get support. We're not going to be able to do any of these things until we can separate ourselves from our children's actions. Mm-hmm. and see how much of us, you know, is involved in this, what choices we've made that have contributed to this. I often think if I hadn't started bailing him out so soon, things might have changed from his history. Because I would bail him out and I made excuses. You can't stay in jail. I'm going to bail you out. You can't, my son can't be in jail. Well, he should very well have been there, because he did something incredibly wrong and there's consequences. You know, it's, he never had to experience consequences for a long time because I bailed him out all the time. So, and when you get to that realization as a parent, it's hard, because then we want to beat ourselves up, you know, and that's not going to serve any purpose either. So that's part of that nip excuses. You know, this is happening to my son because I was a bad parent. That's not it at all. You know, I did make poor choices. So did he. We all do. God's going to forgive me and allow me to move on. But what does moving on look like?
We're talking to Allison Botke today on Focus on the Family with your host, Jim Daly. And we certainly do recommend her book, Setting Boundaries with Your Adult Children, Six Steps to Hope and Healing for Struggling Parents.
Do that. How do we begin to set those rules and boundaries and really change our own behavior?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's changing our own behavior. Being able to have an action plan is critical. If you don't have anything to aim for, what's that saying? Go, you'll hit nothing every time.
Right.
So we've got to have a plan. What is it that you want? What's the outcome that you want as a parent? Is it for your child to launch? Maybe not. Or is it to perhaps help them through addiction? Or is it to know if you're supposed to take care of your grandkids? Because a lot of parents now are taking care of grandkids because their kids can't.
Right.
Because they're either in jail or prison or they're addicts and they aren't capable. So it's really, what is it that you as a parent, what do you feel that you need to do? What's the next step? What are expectations? And write that down. I'm a big believer. I'm a writer, obviously. I'm a big believer in writing things down so we can see it, because we don't know, we won't remember in that throes of emotion,
right,
that we're so often in. And if we're communicating with adult children that are dysfunctional or troubled, they may not remember. So I'm a big, you know, proponent of writing things down in a plan and presenting it to our adult child if they play a part in this, such as maybe moving out or what it is that looks like to you. And if you're going to no longer give money, if you're no longer going to support them, or they have to do this in order to get that, you've got to write that down. So that plan, I had to write down everything, how I saw my life, what the steps were. On the other side, a lot of our kids don't know what they're capable of accomplishing,
mm-hmm,
because we've been accomplishing it for them.
Yeah.
So when we step back, there's a very strong possibility that these kids are going to get a clue and get a grip and be able to move forward. But we've just been hanging on to them for too long. You know, so we've got to have that hope that if we can weather this storm, they may come out on the other side, you know, incredibly independent and feeling self-respect, feeling that they've done something good. You know, when you've been taken care of all these years, you know, and now it's up to you to do it, and you make these small successes, that's pretty amazing for young people. And you can see the changes that happens in their life.
Exactly. We got to get through the other two letters, the T and the Y. T is trust your instincts. Y, yield everything to God. The trusting of your instincts, oftentimes that can be born out of fear. And your instincts may be right, but you have to, I think, be checking with other parents.
The A.
Yeah, that is, you know, have the network to be able to do that. But normally instincts are correct. I don't want to understate that. But I'm just thinking sometimes fear can overplay that instinct that you have. But you should always be listening to your heart. Let me put it that way.
Yes, and being able to trust that and deal with the fact that you may go through some pain and you know, fear.
What's
through
an
that.
Example so, of that for you?
I have a really good one. There was a woman who contacted me who's, and this actually happens a lot. Parents are saying, you know, that their kids have fancy cars and they've got money and they've got all these, you know, they're taking trips. They're doing, and yet they're still living at home. This son was living at home, drove a fancy car, had a fancy motorcycle, had a lot of money, and wasn't really working. She didn't see, you know, mom didn't see him really go out to work much. So she's kind of giving excuses to herself. How's he affording this? It turns out he was dealing drugs, had dug a hole, drilled a hole in the floor of his bedroom, and had a floor safe put in the house underneath the carpet. He was arrested. The police came in.
To mom
and dad's house and searched the whole house, found this floor safe filled with money and drugs, cocaine, a lot of cocaine. Mom is really clueless to this, but the police aren't buying that she's clueless to this. She ended up getting arrested and ended up being an accomplice. They said how, and she had to clear her name. It cost her a lot of money for a turkey feast to clear her name, but she wasn't an accomplice, but it's her house. She's paying the bills. He's living there right with her. How on earth could she not know he's doing something illegal when he's driving this, you know, and not working? So she ignored these feelings. And she said to me, I just knew something was wrong. I just didn't know how to, she didn't have a support group at that time. She didn't know how to, what she was going to do. And it was tough. And you see these, I see these stories unfolding often, and it's frightening.
I mean, trusting your instincts is a good rule of thumb, and formulating how to approach that with your adult child, et cetera, really important. Yielding everything to God. That sounds so easy, but probably the most difficult.
Well, I say giving in, you know, isn't giving up. So sometimes we have to just realize that we're going to go through a mess for a while. I've got this plan now. It's going to be tough, but God, you're going to help me. You're going to help me get through this and yield that. And letting go of expectations is really a critical thing. And to expect that God is in control. I'm going to walk through this one day at a time and trust that the plan is going to work out. But realize it's going to be painful. So that's the bottom line. And that being able to be painful is having your support group that you can lean on, you know, and it all ties together. Stopping, you know, beating ourselves up. Talk to a counselor if you need to. It's so intricate in this, surrender, which is what it is. It's surrendering that, okay, you know, I've made some mistakes, but, it's a new day. It's a new dawn. I'm moving forward and we'll see what happens. And
you know, Allison, that old cliche of letting go and let God do his thing with your adult child sounds so easy. It sounds so good, but it's not.
No, it's not. It's not easy. It's not easy. So, you know, my son now is a believer and strong believer and has been free of heroin for 20 some years now. Mm-hmm. But has a real challenge with pain meds. You know, after being in so many accidents, so many motorcycle accidents, is he's now reaping the, you know, the consequences of a very rough lifestyle. And for me, I'm not bailing him out. He's in prison. I'm not, you know, he's serving time. So it's, that surrender is, you know, trusting that God's going to bring him around has been a very positive thing for Chris. You know, he's, exactly where I think God wants him to be. He's learned the Bible back and forth. He's in a prison fellowship study. So he's looking at life in a very different way now, but it's taken a long time. It's and to respect, you know, that he knows now, he won't ask for money to bail him out because he knows that's not going to happen. So, so we've now developed a different connection.
Yeah, that dependency is over.
For parents to develop a true connection with their with their adult kids is important. Not the symbiotic one where you're bailing them out all the time, but a true connection.
You describe the need to apologize as you develop that action plan with your adult child. The parent should apologize to the child. What does that apology sound like?
I'm sorry that I didn't trust you enough to live your life. I'm sorry I didn't give you the independence that you needed to grow on your own. I'm sorry that I kept bailing you out. I'm sorry that I didn't believe in you enough. And I'm sorry that I didn't take care of myself. And that makes me sad now because so many parents are going through this and they aren't taking care of themselves. God has a plan for us as well as our kids. So if we don't know what that plan is and we aren't trusting in him and we aren't depending on him and really walking that faith walk, things are going to continue on that gerbil wheel. They're never going to get fixed. So that's what the apology, it's really saying, I'm sorry and I'm moving on now. I'm sorry you're going to go through some pain now, but this is how it is.
Allison, you have hit the nail on the head, and I think your book has really helped us to think through those things that we need to know. Parents with adult children, where have we blown it? What do we need to do? How do we help them by helping ourselves see things a little differently? I love the way you've laid this out. I mean, I'm even thinking for Gene and I, you know, things that we did well and things that we may have done not so well and the consequences to our boys. And, you know, one of the great things to do is simply to talk with our adult children. Hopefully you have a kind of relationship where that I guess that awareness that hopefully this program has brought you will allow you to have that discussion and certainly get a copy of the book so you can become more familiar with what Allison is talking about. You know, a radio program like this just touches on the surface. We can't go into all the detail, and the book does do that. So I would really encourage you to get a hold of us, get a copy of the book. If you can give a gift to Focus of any amount, if you can support us
for Focus on the Family.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now you have heard from the horse's mouth exactly what goes down. I think for a minute we always forget that adults are also people, and our parents are also people, and at some point they are going to need to cut ties with us if we are not acting to par, or if we are not in accordance to what they wanted or what is good for them. Ladies and gentlemen, can we have the conversation of cutting ties with our adult children so that we can be liberated, so that we can also live a functioning life? Because somewhere, somehow along the way, we get so entangled in the lives of our children that we actually lose complete track of our own lives. And when we lose track of our own lives, it's like we live in the shadows of our children. So for you, my dear friend, for you that has been going through struggles with your child, and your child is an adult, I think this is your cue. I think this is your cue to actually say, you know what? It's okay. I've done my part, and I forgive myself for everything that I was supposed to do any different. So we'll continue this conversation again tomorrow, and let's see.